W263 AI Murfreesboro. W270 AF Murfreesboro.
WGNS Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues, a search for truth.
We want to welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host is District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. We appreciate WGNS airing this broadcast, and we thank you for listening. During today's program, on our Call to Conviction segment, we will review a trial from the past. It is a decades-old cold case murder. It is the trial of State of Tennessee versus Gary and Candace Bush. It was tried in Judge Don Ashe's courtroom in September of 2008. To discuss that case, we have two very special guests. In the WGNS studios today will be Glenn Orand. Glenn is the twin brother of the late Lynn Orand. Glenn will share with you from a family member standpoint the roller coaster ride that is the ups and downs of a cold case investigation. Also with us today is Detective Sergeant Mark DiNardo of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. Sergeant DiNardo, along with Detective Jim Trammell, were the two detectives who are primarily responsible for solving this case. This was one of the most impressive investigations that myself and General Weitzel have ever prosecuted. Also on today's broadcast will be Rutherford County Deputy Court Clerk Robin Gentry. Robin will tell us about grand jury action since our last broadcast. She will also tell us about 7 upcoming murder trials that are scheduled to be heard in Rutherford County. In the Look at the Law segment, General Weitzel will tell us about the legal procedure and the practical aspects of exhumation. General Weitzel is one of the few attorneys who has actually filed for an exhumation in the state of Tennessee. And in the final segment of the broadcast, we will ask all of the listeners to help solve a mystery. Law enforcement will be asking for your help in solving a murder that occurred 18 years ago. This is the murder of Gordon Kent, a 65-year-old man who lived on North Maple Street here in Murfreesboro. Telling us about the Gordon Kent murder will be Detective James Abbott of the Murfreesboro Police Department. We welcome you to the program and thank you for listening and ask for your help in seeking justice. We will begin the broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Hello, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurant, a family restaurant tradition for 4 generations, now in our 24th year, serving our most popular menu item, great-tasting oven-baked chicken soup. Back in 1989, when my mom and dad were planning Demas's, they debated whether baked chicken soup should even be on the menu. Both agreed that it was a good item, but they weren't sure it would be accepted. Because my dad and his sisters had eaten it all of their lives, especially when anybody had a bad cold, they decided to risk it. They did it, and now I can say the rest is history. We made over 65,000 gallons last year and make more every day. We sell it by the cup, bowl, quart, or gallon. You can even freeze it for shipping or to save it for a later date. Give yourself a treat today. Baked chicken soup. Buy it in the store or get it to go. Demas's Restaurant in Murfreesboro, Lebanon, downtown Nashville, and Hendersonville. Get your chicken soup today.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street, across from Toots.
I'm Greg Tidwell.
And I'm Lisa Halliburton. Bell Jewelers welcomes you.
Most $10 watch batteries are replaced while you wait at Bell Jewelers.
Visit the world of Rolex at Bell Jewelers, your official Rolex jeweler. Sales and in-house Rolex repair.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street, across from Toots.
Visit us at belljeweler.com. Like us on Facebook.
Would you like to give back to your community? Getting connected with volunteer opportunities in Rutherford County has never been easier. I'm Becky Lanham with Volunteer Rutherford, and I want to help you make a difference in the lives of others. By visiting volunteerrutherford.com, you will have access to the most comprehensive listing of nonprofit agencies in our county. Whatever your skill set, Volunteer Rutherford will help you find a way to use your talents to change the lives of others. VolunteerRutherford.com, connecting citizens to service.
From call to conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
In 1981, Candace Oran was married to Lynn Oran. The Orans had two children, both boys, Terry and Gary. The family lived on Peachtree Street in Murfreesboro. Lynn Oran worked at North American Car. His wife, Candace, worked at Jim Top. Candace Oran had a co-worker named Gary Bush. Candace also had a younger brother named Kevin Patterson. At about 6 a.m., on the morning of January 16, 1982, Lynn Oran leaves home to go deer hunting on Norma Patterson's property. Norma Patterson is Candace Oran's mother. Norma Patterson hears Lynn Oran's truck pulling into her driveway. Approximately 10 to 15 minutes later, two gunshots were heard, and Norma Patterson believed that Lynn had shot a deer. When 10 o'clock came and Norma Patterson had not heard or saw Lynn Oran, she became concerned. Her husband and son go looking for Lynn Oran. There was snow on the ground that morning. They see Lynn Oran's footprints leading from his truck into the woods. They follow the footprints and make an horrific discovery. Lynn Oran has been murdered. He has been shot to death. No autopsy was performed on the body in 1982. Months, then years passed. No suspects were charged, and the case grew cold. 25 years later, in March of 2007, the Lynn Oran murder case is reopened. An inmate at the Rutherford County Jail came forward with information. Information that pointed to Kevin Patterson, the brother of Candace Oran, as the murderer. After several months of new investigation, Kevin Patterson was charged with the murder of Lynn Oran. On March 17, 2008, Kevin Patterson pled guilty to second-degree murder. He agreed to testify truthfully regarding his involvement in the case, his sister Candace's involvement, and her then-husband and former co-worker Gary Bush's involvement in the conspiracy to murder Lynn Oran. Kevin Patterson received a sentence of 25 years. When the case was reopened in 2007, Lynn Oran's body was exhumed, an autopsy was performed, additional evidence was obtained. And after many more interviews, detectives Mark DiNardo and Jim Trammell obtained enough evidence to charge Gary and Candace Bush. The trial of Gary and Candace Bush began September 12, 2008. The trial was presided over by Judge Don Ash. At trial, Kevin Patterson testified. He told the jury that both his sister, Candace Oran Bush, and Gary Bush had convinced him to murder Lynn Oran. He told the jury he was promised money and other assistance if he did what they wanted him to do. He testified that the Bushes planned the murder of Lynn Oran and that Gary Bush supplied him the shotgun that he used. Other evidence was produced of a romantic involvement between Gary and Candace while she was still married to Lynn Oran. Evidence was also produced that following Lynn Oran's death, Candace Bush received over $150,000 from various sources. After 5 days of testimony, a Rutherford County jury found Gary and Candace Bush guilty of murder in the first degree. They were both sentenced to life in prison. We are honored to have with us today in the WGNS studios the twin brother of Lynn Oran. We want to welcome Glenn Oran to the program. Welcome.
Good morning.
We're also going to have Detective Sergeant Mark DiNardo in, and we'll talk to him in a few minutes. But Glenn, can you tell us how this case has affected you and other members of the family?
Well, it put some closure whenever the trial was over. It was a long, drawn-out thing. They investigated it for, I'd say, close to a year.
And I believe that you've shared earlier with us before that on the morning that your brother was killed, you had an unusual experience. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, sir. At that time, I was driving a truck over the road. I was in Spartanburg, South Carolina. The load I was supposed to pick up that Friday morning was canceled because the weather was so bad it even snowed over in South Carolina. So I had to lay over, and I got a motel room. And early that Saturday morning, I woke up, I jerked in the bed, and I thought, man, what's wrong with me? And as I was laying back down, I jerked again. Later that afternoon, I found out that Lynn had been murdered.
This investigation took more than two decades. Can you tell us the ups and downs of how you emotionally felt about these investigations and whether or not your brother's murder would ever be captured and prosecuted?
I'd say probably for the first 20 years, I kept hoping that it would be solved. They would find out who murdered Lynn. I always thought that Kevin had done it, just a gut feeling, and I always told my family, I said, I think Candy knows something about it. She knows Kevin, you know, killed Lynn. And then I guess after 20 years, I just give up. I said, hey, you know, they got away with it.
Okay. I want to ask you, and I hope I'm not being insensitive. I've discussed this with you earlier this morning. I can only imagine the emotional drain it has on you and your family, but I know that the police at some point came to you and said, we're making progress in the case, but we're going to need to exhume the body of your brother. Can you tell us how that impacted on you and your family?
It was very hard. I was more or less reliving everything all over again, just like it had just happened. And thinking about, you know, the funeral, and I thought about the night before he was buried. I stayed up there by myself with him, and I would get up and walk over and look at him, pat him on the shoulder, say, Lynn, I promise you I will kill the person that killed you. And I did that all night, and then I was thinking about them exhuming his body, you know, and thinking, you know, hey, it's just his remains. You know, he's gone. He's in heaven.
I know that this was a family-type situation, and people like Norma Patterson, who was Candace Bush's mother, actually helped in the investigation. And there was a lot of cooperation from other people in the community. How important was the help of other people in the community in helping to solve your brother's murder?
It was a lot of help. People coming forward, telling what really happened. And Ms. Patterson, I think she did a real good job.
Now, Detective Mark DiNardo and Detective Jim Trammell were the two primary investigators on this case. Can you tell us a little bit about your interaction with them?
Yes, they kept us notified all the time to let us know what was going on. And I said, hey, they know something. You know, they wouldn't be having his body exhumed and everything. They're going to solve this case. At first, you know, I had my doubts, you know, and then as it went on, I said, oh, yeah, they're going to solve the case. And that was a big high for all of our family.
You know, quite often you hear about closure. And I realize that closure means different things to different people, but do you ever get to the point where after you have lost a loved one that you're able to adjust with that and move forward?
Oh, yes, you adjust with it and move forward. We still think about him. Think about the good times we had and everything. But, you know, if I just say, well, they didn't get away with it.
I think one of the most tense times in any trial is when the jury comes back to return their verdict. Do you remember how you felt when they came back and they had found Gary Bush and Candace Bush guilty? Can you describe that for us?
It was just a great relief. A lot of pressure, weight right off your shoulders. Just lift it off, hey.
I'm going to turn to General Weitzel and ask if he has any questions or any comments he would like to make.
Paul, one thing that I recall, and you mentioned that Kevin Patterson ultimately, after he was questioned by the detectives, admitted that he had shot Lynn O'Ran. And at the time that Mr. Patterson did this, he was a juvenile. I believe he was, if I'm not mistaken, 17 years old. And so here we are some 20-plus years after the crime had been committed, and we had to take Kevin Patterson, who I believe was in his 40s, back to juvenile court to start the process. And in our discussions, both you and I, the detectives, and then with the O'Ran family, we tried to determine what the ultimate goal was going to be in this prosecution. And Mr. Patterson, as you mentioned, got 25 years, which is less than what Candace and Gary Bush got. But we really felt like because he was a juvenile at the time and that he was manipulated by the older co-conspirators in this case. And Glenn, I remember we sat down and discussed with the family what we ought to do with Kevin. And can you kind of go through that and tell how the family felt about the approach that we took in prosecuting the case?
Yes, whenever we went in and talked to you, General, yes, we all talked about it, you know, 25 years, and I said, man, I'd at least like to see the man do at least 10 years with, you know, before he gets out on parole or whatever. And I said, oh, that will probably happen. He's eligible, I think they said, in 8.5 years. But I told my family, I said, I want these other two. They're the reason Lynn is dead. It's not Kevin so bad, the trigger man. He would have never done it if it hadn't been for Gary and Candace. Those are the two I want.
And I know you'll recall this. At the time that the murder happened, Kevin's wife had just had a child. And they were in financial difficulties. And as Mr. Newman mentioned in his summary of the case, they offered him money and told him they would help with his bills, with his hospital bills, if he would do this. So they really manipulated the young man at that point is the way we viewed the case.
Yes, sir, you're exactly right. They manipulated him. They offered him $5,000, and I heard that they never did even pay him the $5,000. And then after they gave him a place to stay, it wasn't but just a few weeks later till Candace kicked him out.
Well, Glenn, we want to really thank you for coming forward and being a part of the broadcast today. We want to thank you for your cooperation in the prosecution of this case, and we want you to tell the other members of the family that it was a pleasure working with them in this prosecution.
And yes. I'll second that, Glenn. It was one of the things about these type of prosecutions, as sad as it was, we got to meet a great family, and we enjoyed working with you all. And one of the most satisfying things as a prosecutor is seeing, as you mentioned, a case come to conclusion and get a good result for the victim's family, and that was the result in this case.
Yes, sir, General. It's always a pleasure to see you and Powell.
We'll be back after these messages.
At the Salvation Army Family Store, you can get bargain prices on clothes, furniture, household goods, electronics, and more. Find special savings on furniture, which is discounted 10% every 10 days it's on the floor.
Everything from sofas, desks, chairs, bed sets.
Lieutenant Andy Seiler.
The money that we make at the Salvation Army Family Store goes right back into our programs in Rutherford County.
The Salvation Army Family Store is at 125 South Front Street, across from Captain D's on Broad. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m.
The Doughboy Challenge is a 5K race for charity through historic downtown Murfreesboro. This community event is sponsored by General Mills and benefits local charities. This year's charities include the Governor's Books from Birth Foundation, Music City Trikes, and Boys and Girls Club of Rutherford County. The race will be on Saturday, May 31st at 7:30 a.m. in downtown Murfreesboro. Special appearances by Buzz the Bee, the Trix Rabbit, and the Pillsbury Doughboy. For more information, please visit doughboychallenge.com.
Hello, I'm Laura Bowling, your Rutherford County Circuit Court Clerk. In just 4 years, I have upgraded and modernized the operations of the General Sessions, Juvenile, and Circuit Court Clerk's offices by improving technology, empowering our great staff to work more effectively and efficiently, and also created a collections department that has returned $1.5 million right back to offices that serve you. There is more to be done. I would be honored to continue our great work with your vote in the May 6th Republican primary. Paid for by Friends of Laura Bowling, Mary Allen Treasurer.
The Nashville Singers invite you to Life Point Church in Smyrna on Friday evening, May 9th, for their Spring Spectacular Concert. Other performers include the Music City Youth Orchestra and the Toontown Show Chorus. Tickets are just $20 for adults and $10 for students. This event supports music education grants and scholarships impacting students and area nonprofits. Order online by visiting NashvilleSingers.org or by calling 852-7464. That's 852-SING.
Some of our babies are born to be wild. Some of our babies are born to sing. But some babies are born premature.
That's why St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital offers a neonatal intensive care unit.
Because, of course, we all want a baby that's born to be happy.
Great things before, during, and after your little one arrives at St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital in Murfreesboro.
Great care right here.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
I'd like to welcome to the program this morning Miss Robin Gentry. She's the Deputy Circuit Court Clerk in the Criminal Division. Robin, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
When we were on last month, the grand jury had not met in April, but we have those figures now, and can you tell us about the grand jury action last month in April?
Yes, sir. There were 120 cases indicted, of which 86 were felonies and 34 misdemeanors.
And we want to start this part of the program by saying that under our law, all defendants named in the upcoming trials that we're about to discuss are presumed to be innocent. And with that, would you tell us about any noteworthy trials that are currently scheduled in the Rutherford County courts in the next several months?
Of course. June, we have, starting June the 16th, is the trial of Jacob Perriman. And he is charged with the first-degree murder of his wife, Carla, and the aggravated assault of her 7-year-old son. This murder was reported on February 14th of last year, and the aggravated assault was reported on December the 12th of 2012. And that case is going to be tried before Judge Bragg. July the 22nd, we have a cold case of the trial of Jewel Moses Bess, and he's charged with first-degree murder of his wife, Deborah. This was reported on August the 19th of 1986 and occurred on Richland Road. That will also be tried before Judge Bragg. In August, we have on August the 11th, the trial of Aaron Walker, who's charged with the first-degree murder of Kevin Barrett. He was an employee of the Rutherford County Board of Education. That occurred on the Burks Hollow Road in the southern part of the county on July the 25th of 2011. Judge Bragg's going to try this case. September 30th, the trial of Kenny Hughes, who is charged with first-degree murder of Tangelica Wardlow. And that incident occurred on Gold Valley Drive in Murfreesboro, April the 28th of last year. This case will be tried before Judge Siskin. October 28th, the trial of Dominic Green, also known as City, who is charged with first-degree murder of Terrell Shannon and the attempted murder of Elizabeth Wright. This incident occurred on August the 12th of 2012 on Bentley Street in Murfreesboro. Judge Siskin will try this case. November the 17th, the trial of Carrie Tomlin, who's charged with the first-degree murder of Maria Lambert. The incident occurred on Bolton Drive in Smyrna in December of 12. That case will be tried in Judge Bragg's court. December the 8th, the trial of Michael Edward Tusey. He's charged with first-degree murder of Ellis Wayne Smith. Mr. Smith's body was discovered on March the 9th of 2012 in a vacant house on Southeast Broad Street in Murfreesboro. That case will be tried before in Judge Bragg's court.
Well, it looks like that certainly going to be busy in the courts. A number of homicide cases pending, and as you're aware, we had another homicide in the city of Murfreesboro this week. And in looking at the cases as you went through them, I note that several of them happened in 2011, 2012. Can you explain why it takes so long for a murder case to come to trial?
It's the investigation that you guys have to do, and you work really hard to do it. It just takes time. Getting the pretrial matters heard before the court and just scheduling them out in a length of time that you know that you can carry it through and do the best job that you possibly can.
And most of these cases, in fact, take several days to try because of the number of witnesses and whatnot. So,
usually a week.
Yeah, they're very complicated.
Yes, sir.
Robin, one thing that is kind of new to the clerk's office, and I think probably in the last couple of years, is the clerk's website.
Yes, sir.
And Ms. Bowling set this up. Tell us about that, please, ma'am.
Well, it can be informative. On our homepage, it gives you a brief summary of our office and our duties, and it tells you how to pay the court costs and fines and where. It gives you access to parking areas, phone numbers to the offices and where the offices are located. It has links to the Tennessee Code, the Administrative Office of the Courts, Tennessee Justice. It gives you a lot of information along with our court calendars.
And do you believe, since the website's been up and running, that it's been helpful to not only the public, but to the lawyers and the judges?
Yes, sir. Actually, it's cut down on a lot of our phone calls. Not completely, but it has helped because your office, the public defender's office, the attorneys, bonding companies, everyone have access to our calendars daily. They know what cases are going to be set and when their clients have to be in court and so forth.
And if you would, give the address for the website out to the folks that are listening.
Sure. It's www.rutherfordcountytn.gov/courts/.
Well, Robin, thanks so much again this month for being part of the program, and big thanks to you and all the employees of the Circuit Court Clerk's Office. You do a wonderful service for the county.
Thank you very much.
Now more than ever, start your mornings with WGNS. Swap and Shop with Bart Walker. Weekday mornings, 7:50 to 8:10 on WGNS, AM, FM, online.
This is Alex Johnson.
And this is Crystal Dangerfield.
On behalf of the Letty Blaze, we would like to give a special thanks to the Murfreesboro community and Blackman supporters.
As we celebrate our state and national championship season, please help us by visiting ucaring.com/LadyBlaze.
Weather Eye.
We'll see mostly sunny skies this afternoon, a high in the upper 60s and west winds between 5 and 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low near 46. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 54.
This is Eloise Gaither, former Circuit Court Clerk. I would like to tell you about a friend, Lance Jenkins, who is running for Circuit Court Clerk. Lance has over 18 years' experience working for the Rutherford County government. With his vast knowledge and leadership, Lance will make a great hands-on clerk who will move the clerk's office in the right direction. Lance Jenkins would appreciate your vote and support for Circuit Court Clerk in the upcoming election on May the 6th.
I am Lance Jenkins, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the Lance Jenkins Campaign for Circuit Court Clerk, Linda E. Jenkins, Treasurer.
No matter what the make and model of your vehicle is, Murfreesboro Collision Center will repair it right the first time.
Here at Murfreesboro Collision Center, we work on all makes and models.
Murfreesboro Collision Center has a long tradition of serving local residents.
Hi, I'm David Wark. I've been with Murfreesboro Collision Center since 1996.
Murfreesboro Collision Center on Broad at Northfield, behind Ford of Murfreesboro.
What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Paul, this morning I want to talk a little bit about autopsies and exhumations, really as it pertains to the case that we discussed a little earlier, the Oran case, and that was the first time that we, as an office, had been called upon to seek an exhumation. And having never done that, I really didn't know what to do. But the Tennessee Code provides the procedure which you follow, and at the request of the medical examiner or county medical examiner, the district attorney can file a petition in the criminal court and seek to have a body disinterred. And in the Oran case, we wanted to do that because no autopsy had been performed at the time of death. It was obvious that he'd been shot, but we were hoping that we might find some other evidence to corroborate or support the theory that we had in the case. And when you file that petition, the statute also requires that you use your best efforts to contact the next of kin. And if there's an objection to the autopsy, certainly the next of kin has the right to fight that. In this case, it was a little bit odd because, of course, we heard from Glenn Oran, and Lynn's family was very much in favor of the autopsy if it would move the investigation along. And then you had, of course, Mr. Oran's ex-wife, Candace Bush, who, in my mind, was not in favor of the autopsy. I think at that time, if I recall, and you may be able to help me, she was represented by counsel, and I think probably, although I certainly don't know, after discussions with her counsel, said if you fight it, it'll look like you've got something to hide. So we filed the petition. No one objected. The court granted our request and issued an order to have Mr. Oran's body disinterred. And it was at the Memorial Gardens out off of the Broad Street, Smyrna, between here and Smyrna. And I remember the day, and I know you two too, we were out there. The first time I'd ever been involved in anything like that. And I remember looking at Candace Bush, and she certainly had a look for you and I, if you'll recall that. And it wasn't a smile. But I've had the occasion on two other cold cases to have exhumations. One was done in the state of West Virginia in the Gene Stump case. And I went to West Virginia with the two detectives Sharp and Goodwin in that case. And because he was buried in a family cemetery and his family was in favor of it, it was a very simple process there. And we just used the local funeral home, which happened to be Stump's funeral home, to go out and exhume the body for us. And then the medical examiner sent two doctors and an investigator from Nashville to Charleston, West Virginia, to their medical examiner's office, and that's where the autopsy in that case was performed. Very simple procedure there. And then we had an exhumation that took place in Kentucky of a case that's pending now, so I can't be very specific about that, but in that case, the county coroner was allowed to authorize an exhumation. And I'll never forget, we were going to the cemetery to look at the gravesite to see what we would need to do, and there was a dump truck with a backhoe parked in front of a convenience store right across the street from the cemetery, and there was a fellow standing there in a pair of overalls, had no shirt on, had obviously been working with that backhoe that day because he was pretty muddy, had long hair and a beard, and somebody said, well, there's the county coroner right there. So we stopped and talked to him on the side of the road and told him what we needed, and he was more than helpful, agreed to do it, and came the next day, and we exhumed that body. And actually, because Kentucky did not want to perform the autopsy in their medical examiner's office because it wasn't a case in Kentucky, transported the body back to Nashville for an autopsy, then back to Kentucky for reinterment. But those are three instances that I've been involved in, and they've gone very smoothly. And in all three cases, it proved very valuable in the investigation and moving the case forward.
Bill, I know that you have done three of these in the past, and I know you well enough to know that you take disturbing a gravesite very seriously. Can you tell us how this impacts on you and what considerations you have to look at and examine before you make that all-important decision to go into court and say, I want to dig the burial site of this person up.
Well, you know, Paul, really the question you ask is kind of, if I was this person and was trying to solve a case of who killed me, would I want this to happen? And I believe that every one of the individuals involved in these three exhumations would have answered that question yes. And certainly in all of our cases, the family was in favor of this, so it made it very, very easy. But I want to tell you, it's a process. It takes a while. It takes several hours because the casket has been in the ground for a number of years. It's very delicate in trying to remove it. It's very difficult, actually. And the whole time you're standing there at that gravesite, it's running. You're replaying the case over and over and thinking about really the moment and what you're doing. And you hope that you're not making a mistake because you know what the family's going through. So, as I said, in our three cases, it moved the investigation along and ultimately in two of those led to a successful prosecution, and it remains to be seen in the third case. But certainly it was valuable evidence.
We'll return with a look at our cold case for this month after these important messages.
Dave Ramsey, America's most trusted money expert.
The Dave Ramsey Show, live each day from 1 to 4 on WGNS Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Aloha, this is Omni Hut.
Visiting with Polly Walls at the Omni Hut, open Tuesday through Saturday for dinner.
We have got a great customer base, and some folks only come for special occasions, and then we have folks that come weekly. We see A to Z. We've learned to stay with the same recipes. Start from scratch, fresh kitchen.
Catch the Aloha spirit at the Omni Hut.
Come see us at 618 South Lowry Street, just inside Smyrna, near Nissan.
If you're near retirement or thinking about retirement, you probably have a lot of questions. How do you make your savings last? How much should you take out and when? You're ready for retirement, but are your finances? I'm Edward Jones Financial Advisor Lee Colvin. Let's work together to help ensure your finances can keep up with your unique needs over the long haul. Stop by our office in the Public Shopping Center on the corner of Rutherford and Broad for a face-to-face appointment. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
The time is now. Bob Woods Auction. The time is now.
Absolute Antique Auction, Saturday, May 3rd in Tullahoma. Lots and lots and lots of antiques. See all the pictures of them online at bobparksauction.com. Auction is at 210 Short Springs Road, again in Tullahoma. Go to bobparksauction.com.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
The murder of Gordon Kent has been one of the most intriguing cases that the Murfreesboro Police have ever investigated. It now has been over 18 years since Gordon Kent was brutally murdered inside his North Maple Street apartment. Effort to prosecute the person or persons responsible for Gordon Kent's death have been unsuccessful. In an effort to uncover new and additional information, the Murfreesboro Police Department has authorized the following facts to be released for this broadcast. At the time of his death, Gordon Kent was 65 years old. He was 5 feet 8 inches tall and weighed only 128 pounds. Mr. Kent lived alone in his North Maple Street apartment. A few days prior to his death, Gordon Kent's mother had passed away. Police have learned that Gordon Kent stood to inherit from his mother. Then, on February the 12th, 1996, the day that Gordon Kent's mother was buried, one of Gordon Kent's neighbors saw two men arrive at Gordon Kent's apartment. The two men were in a dark-colored foreign car, possibly a Mitsubishi. The two men enter the Kent apartment, and they stay there a short time and then leave. Later, the dark, foreign-looking car returns. But this time, only one man is seen in the car. The lone man enters Gordon Kent's apartment. A short time later, the neighbor hears banging and yelling coming from the Kent apartment. He later sees the man leave in the dark-colored car. The neighbor describes the man as being Caucasian and young, probably in his 20s. After the man left, the neighbor never saw Gordon Kent alive again. The next day, February the 13th, 1996, Gordon Kent's cleaning lady came to the Kent apartment to do the cleaning. She was unable to get anyone to come to the door. She called her husband, who was a friend of Mr. Kent's. Ultimately, the police, with the help of the landlord, opened the Kent apartment. Inside, Gordon Kent's badly beaten and lifeless body is discovered. The medical examiner determined that Gordon Kent died from blunt force trauma, trauma that caused multiple skull fractures and ultimately his death. Gordon Kent was, in layman's terms, beaten to death. Law enforcement has reopened the Gordon Kent investigation. Several witnesses have been interviewed. More interviews are now being scheduled. With the help of the TBI lab, progress is being made in the case. Investigators are now seeking the final pieces of the puzzle. Law enforcement now asks for your help. If you have any information regarding the murder of Gordon Kent, please come forward. Please help bring justice to this case and help make our community a safer place to live. With us today is Detective James Abbott. Detective Abbott, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
Detective Abbott, without divulging any crucial information, can you tell us whether you believe this case is solvable?
We do believe that this case is solvable. Like with any of these cases, it's just a matter of getting the person or people that have more information about it to come forward.
And I'm not going to ask you to give us any names, but do you believe that right now you have a prime suspect in the case?
We do. We do believe, and we've focused in on a suspect.
As with many investigations in this case, where you may feel confident that you have the evidence that you need, but you need a little bit more, do you believe there is someone in this community or someone in this area who may even be listening to the broadcast who holds the last piece to that puzzle, and are you asking them to come forward?
Yes, we do believe that there is someone out there that may have that last piece of the puzzle. And we need anyone and everyone that has any information about this case to come forward, whether they think it may be helpful or not. Let us make that determination. Just please come forward if you do have any information.
If someone has information about this case, how would they get into contact with the proper people to turn that information over?
They can contact the Murfreesboro Police Department's Criminal Investigation Division and ask for me, Detective James Abbott. Our number is area code 615-893-2717. They can also call the Rutherford County Crime Stoppers.
Detective Abbott, General Weitzel, I believe, is going to ask you a few questions about cold case investigations and some of the techniques that are used in helping to prosecute these cases.
Detective Abbott, welcome to the show. Appreciate you being here today. I know you've worked on several cases that are cold, this being one of them. And I believe one of the cases that you worked on we announced for trial in maybe December, the Tussie case. So can you tell us what you feel like is important in trying to solve these cases?
A lot of times what is most important about these kind of cases is actually getting the person or people that may have knowledge about these cases to come forward. You find that there's somebody out there, there's no such thing as that perfect crime. Someone will eventually talk to someone about their crime that they've committed, and it's just important to find that person, whether it be a friend, someone they've confided in, an old cellmate, someone that they have talked to that where they either was bragging or just wanting to get it off their chest of what they did.
You know, a lot of people, and this is true for some cases, a lot of cases, because of advances in technology, we're able to look at the evidence again and maybe get DNA or something like that. But my experience has been that a lot of these cases are solved by just taking another look at it and good old detective work. Has that been your experience also?
It has. A lot of these kind of cases, and with any, even a fresh kind of major case like a homicide, a lot of times we get the what they call the CSI effect, and people, they think that, you know, DNA, fingerprints, and those are all really good building blocks to build a good, solid case, evidentiary-wise. But those type of pieces of evidence, there's nothing like a good witness, someone who has information that can come forward and explain and tell you what happened or give you what the motive was and explain that. That is probably the key piece of any investigation. Just get out there, burn some shoe leather, and interviews, talking to people.
And I think there's another common misconception in cold cases that in some way the detectives that originally investigated the case made mistakes or didn't do a good job. And there's nothing that can be further from the truth. They laid the foundation for the case. They collected the evidence, and they interviewed the witnesses. And I know in the case that we discussed earlier, Paul, you'll remember this, in the Oran case, there was a very crucial witness that came forward who, at the time of that crime, would not have spoken to police. But as that person grew up and matured and had a family themselves, their attitudes towards the police changed. And when they were contacted this time, they were willing to help and were a key witness in that prosecution. And I think when you say we're hoping people will come forward, that's the scenario we're talking about.
Yes, sir. Again, I mean, in most of these kind of cases, a lot of times when you go back and re-interview people, you find people that were already interviewed by police or detectives in the initial stages, but they would not cooperate.
Well, again, James, I want to thank you for being here. You've done a great job as a detective. As a matter of fact, Paul and I are off to court this morning on one of your cases, the old Charlie's homicide case. We have a post-conviction hearing, and I know you did a great job in that case. So keep up the good work, and thanks again for being with us.
As we end the program today, we want to thank all of our guests for appearing. We appreciate WGNS providing the airtime. And we want to thank our producer, Scott Walker. And most of all, we want to thank all of the listeners. Our next scheduled broadcast is Friday morning, June the 6th, between 8 and 9 a.m. We leave by saying a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For Bill Weitzel, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.